Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, special adoptions and a very special adoption agency. The Oakland-based adoption agency that was the first in the nation to focus on placing special needs children, including older children and sets of brothers and sisters, celebrates turning 40. Founded in 1973, Adopt a Special Kid was also among the first, if not the first, to encourage gay and lesbian parents and single parents and renters and lower income and older and differently abled prospective parents to adopt. Over the years, special needs evolved to encompass not only children with physical or emotional needs, but also kids older than four, siblings, and neglected kids, including queer kids rejected or abused by their biological families or in foster home settings. Adopt a Special Kid has placed more than 3,500 children with permanent parents, what they call forever families, during its 40 years. It offers more than just adoption. ASK also provides families and their children with workshops, classes, support groups, and specialized care during all stages of the adoption process. Before, during, and even after the adoption itself is legally finalized, ASK extends its services free of charge to families within 21 counties in California. And there's a great need. In California alone, there are currently about 50,000 children in foster homes, more than 13,000 of whom are on waiting lists for permanent homes. Stick around for a discussion of foster parenting, adoption, how queer kids are more often falling through the cracks and likely to be abused or neglected in foster home settings and end up homeless, and what's involved in stepping up to share your love and help children at risk find security and stabilize their lives. My guests are Dennis Hanley, a currently single gay man raising three half-brothers whom he and his former partner adopted together in 2006. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you.
And also Donnie DeBolt. She's the executive director of Adopt a Special Kid, also called ASK. And she's the daughter, one of 19 children, 14 of whom were adopted, if I have the numbers right.
You're right.
It's hard to keep track. It must be for you, too. Of Adopt a Special Kid's founders, Bob and Dorothy DeBolt. Dorothy passed away in February. So welcome, Donnie.
Thank you very much for having us on this evening. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks to both of you for coming in. Dennis, I'd like to start with you and your story. What inspired you to want to adopt kids in the first place?
Well, you know, I've always wanted to be a parent. I always knew that even as a gay man. And I came across ASK when they were running an ad in the BAR. Born and raised in San Francisco, that was my go-to newspaper. That's how I found out about them. I've known about them since the mid-90s, and I wasn't ready to adopt until I was in a relationship and a little more stable, and that was in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And had you had, any fears or concerns about being able to adopt, just because of being a gay man, for example?
Certainly. Oh. I mean, I think that's something that we all are worried about, and I still talk to people now, my peers, who aren't quite sure, are there adoption agencies that will work with us because we're gay, and I'm happy to share that, ASK not only will work with us, they will reach out to us to work with us.
Mm-hmm. So how did you said you'd known about ASK from ads in the BAR
Yes. From
way back when. So you were already somewhat familiar. How did you go about contacting them, and what was the process like when you finally decided to go forward?
Well, in the 90s, I first went to them as a single potential dad and went through the entire process and then realized that, maybe I can't do this as a single parent because I was traveling a lot for work. And so then I went the traditional route. I met my ex-partner. We moved in together. We got married. We bought a house. And the next logical step was to start a family. So we went back to ASK and worked with them.
Okay. And so now you're a single parent again, even though you hadn't planned to be.
Yes.
Although you said you co-parent with him, right? You share.
We do. We do. It's a commitment that we made together. And, our boys, Isaac, Brian, and Chris, were 3, 4, and 7 when we adopted them. And that was 7 years ago. We've got a teenager now. And we do co-parent. He comes over and does homework with the boys every mm-hmm. night.
Cute, cute kids, by the way. There's a photo on our website, outinthebay.org. Check it out. Tell us a little bit more about what the process was like. How long did it take to actually get your boys? And, was it years of kind of looking and waiting for a match? How does that work?
Well, the agency does prepare us that it will take a little while for us to go through the entire process. We were really fortunate because as soon as we were ready for matching, we went through the training. meeting. We went through the orientation, the training, the interviews, and then Red Cross training and all that. And by the time we got to the matching process, we thought we would have a lot more time. The boys' social workers actually saw our family profile and approached us. Mm-hmm. We were looking for two boys, a sibling pair under 2 years old, and we ended up with three boys, 3, 4, and 7 at the time.
Okay.
And, you know, we heard about them on August 22nd, and they moved in with us on September 6th.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes. I can't believe how fast that is.
0 to 60.
So I guess that was love at first sight, huh?
Yes, it was.
And, yeah, I'm sure they must fight from time to time, but this photo that you sent me that's on our website, that they just look like they're totally in love with each other, too.
Yes. Yes, they are.
That's great. So how has having your boys changed your life and theirs?
Well, I will be honest and say that the fantasy of parenthood and the reality of it is miles apart. But I wouldn't change it for a thing. And I think that if I were to write an autobiography, it would be entitled From Fabulous, to Fatherhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me, what was your fantasy?
I thought that, you know, my kids would be really well-behaved and they would
perfect
act a certain
little angels.
Way, dress a certain way. And, you know, that's not the reality of it. I mean, I remember my kids throwing up on me and, you know, and relieving themselves on me. And we just talked about a story, you know, with my youngest child recently when he was 3 years old. I picked him up and, you know, and then he relieved himself on me. So it's not all so glamorous, but it's great.
Right. Okay.
Still worth it.
Donnie DeBolt, tell us a little bit about your family life, first of all, right? You're one of 19
right,
kids.
Actually, one of 20.
One of 20.
That's
so you have 19
okay.
brothers and sisters.
I have that written on the inside of my hand so I'd remember.
And all their names?
And all their names, but don't ask me. I don't have that cheat sheet. But actually, our family started with my stepmom, Dorothy, having 5 biological children of her own. And when she went to have her 6th child, that child passed away. And it was a wake-up call that perhaps she and her husband were taking things for granted, that just having babies that were healthy, like everybody else was in the 50s, was maybe something to consider as being very fortunate. So they decided to pay it forward and adopt a child who didn't have everything at birth that their 5 children did. So they, at that time, we were at war with Korea, and this is 1957, and there was quite an exchange of Korean Caucasian infants coming into America and needing to be adopted. And so they adopted their first child in 1957, their second Korean Caucasian child in 1959, and then her husband passed away. So as a widow with 7 kids, she then shortly thereafter adopted 2 more boys from Vietnam who were 14 years old, paraplegic. And then a few months after that, went on a blind date.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine she's gorgeous. But she was not very successful with blind dates because, you know, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, no man wants one kid, let alone 7, right?
Right, right. So she was stood up quite a bit from what I understand. Anyway, that blind date, that gentleman was my dad, Bob DeBolt. I'm his 1 biological daughter. Uh-huh. And they were married 6 months to the day of their blind date. And I became the 10th kid. Mm-hmm. And over the next 10 years, we adopted 10 more kids. So there's 14 kids adopted, 9 of whom have some kind of a physical or emotional challenge. And what really spurred us towards wanting to start a nonprofit where people could adopt was realizing that there's 2 camps of people who didn't really know each other. One camp was these children that were considered unadoptable in the 70s. If I was to say, what's your version of an adoptable child in the 70s, you'd probably say an infant Caucasian female. If I was to say, well, what would the family unit look like? You would probably say heterosexual Caucasian middle class family. Yet we knew of thousands and thousands of children who our culture considered unadoptable, kids that were older than 4, sibling sets, kids who had emotional, physical, or mental challenges, and yet they were languishing in the foster care system. We also knew that there's this camp of people who wanted to adopt, who wanted to be parents, who were not considered to be adoptable parents, and that would be your people who are single, people who are older, people who are gay, people who are renters. And we just really felt like these two camps needed to get together. And if we started an adoption agency to promote both of them, that we knew there was families out there that wanted to adopt these kids. And over the last 40 years, we've placed over 3,500 children. So what we did in 1973, Eric, was very controversial. We were the first agency in the state of California in 63 years to ask for an adoption license. We were the very first...
The first agency to ask for a license at all in 63 years?
Yes. Makes you wonder what we were doing with our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
We weren't doing anything. And yet, when we asked for that adoption license, we came right out of the chute saying, if you're gay, you should be able to be a parent. If you have the heart to want to be a parent, whether it's based in fantasy or reality, as Dennis said, come on, let's give you a chance, because there's so many kids out there. We have way more kids than we have families. And
were there laws on the book at that time about or just regulations or state practice? Were most of the adoptions at that time done by the state itself?
By
state
the government individual agencies, counties. Of whatever county you lived in, right?
So it was all government done. And they were the ones who said, like, you have to meet certain requirements.
Exactly. I mean, there are state regulations that we all have to abide by. But there was nothing on the books that said you couldn't adopt if you were older, or you couldn't adopt if you were gay. But the cultural morals... Mm-hmm. Really suppress people. I heard stories of people going to adoption agencies and doing their first interview and it only lasting 5 minutes versus 2 hours, or having the door closed on them
because
they were gay or being hung up on.
Or single.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a child in need and you have someone who wants to parent them, where do we have the power to say that these two can't be together? Because that was one of the most wonderful things, Eric, of growing up in my family, was seeing how these children who had really lost their birthright to dignity of having that strong foundation of family, once they knew that they were safe, that they were loved, that they were accepted for who they were completely, to watch their spark turn into a flame, to watch them become completely who they could be. It's almost addicting. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful to be a part of. And that's what we see in our families. I mean, some of the families have a hard time. Some of these kids the majority of them are really struggling. I mean, if you have been put into the foster care system, that means something horrific has happened in your biological family. More than likely, Child Protective Services has pulled you out.
Right.
So the judicial system is involved. And what we want to do, what we did before, Eric, is we would say, well, we don't want this kid to get attached to this foster family while we're trying to see the biological family gets the rights back. So once this kid looks like they're starting to attach to the foster family, we're going to pull them out of that foster family and put them in another foster family. Well, you can imagine how that just continues to inflict more pain on a child.
Sure.
So what we do now is it's called concurrent planning, where we do intensive training with the people who want to be parents to be a foster parent. And the hope is that if the parental rights are severed for the biological family, that child would then stay with you and you could adopt them. But in this time of need, while the parents are going through whatever the judicial system is told they need to do, drug, alcohol counseling, parent training, anger management,
right,
what have you.
In hopes of getting their kids back.
Right. If the family is able to reunify and the child goes back to the biological family, you have given so much love and foundation and strength to a child in the most critical time. So you can see, Eric, it's a very child-centric system that we have now. We say to parents, this is not for wimps. This is hard on your heart, potentially, if this child
right.
that you're hoping to
adopt,
you bond, you love them. But often we find that families can stay in contact still with the child. You know, Facebook has really expanded the way that we keep in contact with each other. But it's wonderful for the kids to have that stability, to not have to bounce from foster home to foster home.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you're listening to Out in the Bay. My name is Eric Jansen. My guests are Dennis Hanley and Donnie DeBolt from Ask Adopt a Special Kid. And can you tell me a little bit about you know, we're talking about foster homes. Queer kids in foster homes, gay, lesbian, transgender kids in foster homes, are they having much more severe problems? And if so, can you describe them a little?
I think it's inherent in our culture that if you're gay, you're dealing with a lot of issues because you're dealing with people accepting you or not accepting you. And when you're young, you already have that tangled up in your mind and your self-identity. So as Dennis and I were talking earlier amongst ourselves, at ASK, we're very pragmatic with the parents. During the parent information meeting, we say, you know, these children are packages that come to us that we carefully unwrap like a beautiful present. You don't really know what's inside. Mm-hmm. Some kids have had so much trauma, they don't know yet whether they're straight or whether they're queer. Mm-hmm. Some are evolving, some are questioning, some absolutely know. But also with that child, you don't know if there might be mental health issues later on or medical issues. So what you have to be ready for is that whole package. You have to be really 100% accepting, because that's the biggest thing, Eric, that these kids don't have. They feel rejected. They feel unloved. They feel totally misunderstood. And if you can just be a strong foundation that's listening and loving with acceptance, you'll help them tremendously. But I know also Dennis has some strong ideas of what parents can do that are gay or straight to help.
Absolutely.
Child.
I think that, you know, as a queer youth growing up in San Francisco in a very stable environment, it was a tough time for me. So I can't imagine what it is like to be in foster care and to be moving around and to be, you know, questioning your sexuality. You know, I talked to Donnie earlier on our way over here, and I thought, you know, if your listeners would even consider fostering LGBT youth, and not necessarily adopting, but how wonderful would it be mm-hmm. for them to have a stable environment where they have role models and they can feel safe and they can become, you know, these great, secure, contributing adults.
What age kids are you working with? I assume mostly younger, but especially when they get to the age, you know, I would assume it's adolescents usually when they figure out that they're not straight or something's
right,
different about them.
Right. Usually 4 years old mm-hmm. on up, you're considered old in the adoption foster care system at the age of four. Your probabilities of being placed in a family decrease every year. But we definitely focus on the kids four on up and the sibling sets. And there's so many teenagers in the system who are legally freed for adoption that have never had that foundation, who need somebody to spur them on to dreams of college, to dreams of getting a job. And we do now have AB 12, which is funding for kids from 18 to 21 years old. They're in the foster care system, because it used to be when you're 18 and you're still in the foster care system, bye-bye, mm-hmm. you're done. Well, there's a whole lot of our homeless youth
right off the bat, yeah.
So now we have funding for AB 12 with 18 to 21-year-olds, but
What does that do? I mean, basically, it allows a foster family to keep a child longer,
right.
So that once they become a legal adult, they're just not out on the street,
exactly.
Or the family doesn't have to bear the burden themselves of the
right.
cost of
exactly.
this person.
Exactly. Some of the money with the 18 to 21-year-olds goes to the family that is helping support the child, and some of the money goes to the child.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and it's a very heady experience for many of these kids to get money for the first time.
Right.
And it's definitely a challenge, but you can see the difference in the individual who's had someone who's stood by them for years and that they know
right,
versus
right.
someone who's never known the stability.
Yeah,
and they
I still rely on my parents, and I'm 55.
Hey, I talked to my dad more than an hour ago, right, Dennis?
Yeah. There you go.
So I'm with you on that one.
Right. So you have some statistics here that I found on your website about the likelihood of kids being homeless if they are in the foster care system
yes.
before actually ever getting adopted by a family. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes. Well, luckily you have the cheat sheet there.
Do you want to see it? I can pass it over to you.
Sure. Let's be accurate for your listeners.
Since I can't
okay.
read,
so
the
on. Statistics are 65% of foster youth will become homeless. 17 times more likely to be homeless than other youth. 22% will be arrested or incarcerated. 54% will not complete high school, and less than 3% will graduate from college. However, these statistics dramatically change when we're able to have a child adopted.
Can you give me an idea of, you know, in terms of numbers, how many children in California are waiting to be adopted? I mean, we had a number earlier, 13,000, but how has that changed over the years? I mean, obviously the state has grown in population, but percentage-wise, are we in a sort of a higher proportional need for adoptive parents than we had been in the past, or has that always been a problem that just wasn't addressed?
Great question. It's always been a problem that's never been addressed. However, the number of kids in foster care in the state of California has decreased. And that is because of family reunification. There's been a stronger focus now on what can we do to help that family get back together again, because it is to the child's advantage to be able to stay with their family. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what everybody needs to do. But if you can't, then what's the next best option? Adoption.
Okay. So tell us about the this big party you've got coming up next Friday, the 1st of November.
Okay, everybody, clear your calendars. Here it is. Friday, November 1st, 6:15 to 9:30, Scott's Seafood Restaurant in Jack London Square in Oakland. ASK is celebrating its 40th anniversary, and we will have, you know, the wonderful champagne appetizers, wonderful Scott's dinner, cake, and coffee, and we will also regale you with Alec Mappa, who is a famous comedian.
I've been watching Ugly Betty reruns lately. I love Alec Mappa.
And Alec and his partner adopted a young boy about 3 years ago. And as he says all the time, hands down, it's the best thing that he's ever done. And so he will regale us with the humor of being a parent. And it's going to be a wonderful evening. It's also an opportunity to donate to ASK, because we do not receive federal or state funding for our programs. And we are 100% dependent on our individual donors.
Tell us also about Camp.
Always. Camp Always is the last weekend of every June. We're up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and it's for families who have adopted. This last year, we had 80 children, 50 families, and for one whole week, the kids get all the perks of camp, from s'mores to archery to hiking, arts and crafts, and the parents are able to have workshops by nationally known experts in the field of adoption.
Dennis, have you been to this camp?
I haven't yet because
he's
of
going
the timing.
To.
I'm planning on it, but as a PTA president, the timing never, or as a former PTA president, the timing never works out, and I won't pull my kids out of school.
So you've been very active with the organization. You were on the board of directors for a while, right?
I was. Not only am I an ASK family, I'm a volunteer. I was on the board, and now I'm volunteering again. I truly believe in the mission of the agency.
So another question for you, Donnie. The ASK steered away from international adoptions when that became quite a trend. Was that like 15 or 20 years ago?
Yes. Actually, we had started out doing international and domestic.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found—
Your parents did. They were doing international
Absolutely.
Adoptions.
Absolutely. And then we realized that there was such a need right here in America. I mean, the kids right here in our own neighborhood that really needed to have a focus. And there were so many other agencies very successfully completing international adoptions that we decided just to keep the focus on the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we have a gay or lesbian listener out there who was thinking about adopting. I know that Family Builders by Adoption also works with gay and lesbian parents.
Right.
And as do most at this point, in this day and age, do most adoption agencies work just as well or as positively with gay and lesbian parents?
I would sure hope so. Let's say yes. Let's consider ourselves progressive. But to you listeners who are considering this wonderful journey, make sure that the agency that you partner with is one that feels right to you in your gut, in your heart, because it can take from 6 months to 3 years to find the child that will become part of your family. It's an intimate process. You're going to really want to feel very comfortable with the agency right. that you're with. So if you feel like they say they embrace you, but you don't really feel it in your gut, then don't go with them. We often have parents that are shopping for the right agency. I encourage that. What you'll find at ASK is we're a smaller agency. We're more personalized. You'll have one social worker with you the whole time. And at our gala event on November 1st, we have so many returning families, some who adopted 35 years ago, some who are in the process right now, who are staunch supporters of ASK. So that is a very important part of your journey.
And Dennis, you mentioned that you met your three boys, and less than a month later, they were in your home.
Yes. But
had you gone on a lot of, you know, interviews before that, met other kids before that? I mean, because you just mentioned, Donnie, that, you know, sometimes it can take 6 months, two or 3 years.
Right.
Is there a sort of a typical range of time, or is it just all across
lucky.
The board?
Well, you know, we expected that it would take a lot longer. We were told it would take a lot longer. Our house was certainly not ready for three boys to move in. But, you know, it was the universe brought these boys to us, and we had been looking through the matching books, and we had reached out to people, but we had not met any other kids. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, the boys' social workers saw our family profile and approached us to ask us if we would be interested in the boys.
And they were in Sacramento, is that right?
They were in Sacramento County, yep, yep. And, you know, usually the process is a lot longer, but because our oldest, who was 7 at the time, was starting school, the agency asked us, you know, would you consider taking them now so that we're not putting him into school and then pulling him out in a few months? Mm-hmm. So, you know, after we met them that first day, we got our house ready.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other, you know, final words of advice for people or...
Well, the one thing I hear over and over, Eric, when parents are in matching, which is basically the time where you've passed all your paperwork, all the regulations, and you're ready to now look through. We have three binders. They're each about 3 inches wide, one of boys, one of girls, one of sibling sets. There's an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with a child's photo and then a little paragraph that talks about them. And that's what you look through to see which heart string gets pulled by which child. And inevitably, everybody has told me that when they saw their kids, they just knew it.
Even if it was just the photo, that was like,
even
that
if it
description
was just
was
the
like,
it was, mm-hmm. they just knew it. And it's the most incredible feeling and experience.
Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Gay Radio from San Francisco. I want to thank my guests, Adopt a Special Kid. That's ASK, A-A-S-K, Executive Director Donnie DeBolt, and adoptive parent Dennis Hanley. You can learn more about adoption and about ASK and all its services and its 40th anniversary gala coming up on Friday, November 1st on its website, ask.org. That's ASK with two A's, A-A-S-K.org. If you missed part of this broadcast, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outinthebay.org, by about 8 o'clock tonight, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app. That's right, Stitcher. It lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. You know, while you're there, you can also hear our most recent shows on the on the site and about a dozen of our favorites from our 9 years on the air. That's right, 9 years on the air this month. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KLW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr. As an independent production, not a KLW staff production, Out in the Bay receives no funds from KLW, though, so we need community support. It's easy and tax-deductible at our website, outinthebay.org. And as I said, while you're there, you can sign up for free podcasts and hear all kinds of great shows from the past. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. Learn more about Holly on her blog, hollymead.tumblr.com. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS. That's sfbar.org/LRIS. Or by phone at 415-989-1616. We'd love to hear from you. So write to us, eric@outinthebay.com and marilyn@outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.